The first step in starting a preventive medicine residency program is securing organizational buy-in. Communicating with organizational leadership about the value of preventive medicine residents to their institution is critical for gaining the support and resources needed to start and operate a program. In this episode, Dr. Patrick Remington, residency director at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, shares his experience and insights for the early stages of building a new residency program. So on this first episode of the PMR Toolkit, I'm joined by Dr. Patrick Remington, the inaugural program director for the Preventive Medicine Residency at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we're going to be talking today a bit about the genesis of a PMR program, about the institutions that host PMR programs, the case that needs to be made to institutional leaders to establish them, and the benefit that PMR programs bring to their host institutions. So Dr. Remington, welcome and thank you.
Good to be here. Thanks, Drew.
So to start off, can you share the story of the relatively recent founding of the program at the University of Wisconsin, who you had to speak to and, you know, what it took to get that program started?
Well, I think the unique aspect of preventive medicine residency programs is that they really vary in how they're financed and including the rationale for them across various institutions. And so I think it's important to maybe hear the lesson or the experiences in Wisconsin, but then realize that your experiences in your own institution may be very different. We had a commitment to public health in our medical school. And so part of that was to integrate public health throughout our teaching mission. And we began that by changing the name of our medical school to the School of Medicine and Public Health. And I had the unique opportunity to be associate dean for public health and be sitting in a leadership role at the dean's table. And in addition to integrating public health in medical student education, we looked at ways to develop a Master of Public Health program that was started almost 20 years ago. And then as that program grew and more medical students were interested in public health, we decided to add a graduate medical program in public health and general preventive medicine. And that planning began about a decade ago. We were received initial accreditation and then full accreditation in 2016. And the rationale for our institution was to have a comprehensive medical education program that begins with undergraduate medical education, medical student education, and goes all the way through a dual degree program, but then includes residency education. So I think it's important to see that as a comprehensive commitment of a school of medicine to public health throughout the continuum. The second reason, and a pretty important reason for a medical school, was that we were interested in applying to be a CDC-funded prevention research center. An important fact to know is that when that legislation was passed almost 30 years ago, Congress added that to be eligible, a medical school has to have an accredited preventive medicine residency program. So those two factors, I think a general commitment to public health education, but then also a very specific and tangible benefit for the institution was to become eligible to apply for a grant. As a footnote, we did apply and were subsequently funded as a CDC-funded prevention research center. So that certainly helped not only to make the case, but to also confirm the value of the residency program to the institution, specifically for that grant program.
And who at the institution, you know, in an academic institution, are the key decision makers for what residency programs may or may not be hosted in the institution?
Well, again, I think that's important to note that we are an academic medical center. And I think there are two big players in decision-making in any academic medical center. There's typically the dean of the medical school, who oversees the academic mission, the teaching, research mission of a university. And clearly, that's important for preventive medicine. We have a MPH program that is integrated into our residency training program. And our residents, although they do clinical work for 2 months out of the year, are primarily non-clinical residents. So putting them in an academic department like a Department of Preventive Medicine, we're a Department of Population Health Sciences. Sometimes there are departments of Family Medicine and Community Health. That's very important. So I think leadership from the academic medical center, from the medical school, the university side. The other side is equally important in that the health system, which houses at University of Wisconsin, our graduate medical education program, is also critically important. These residents in our program are employees of the health system of UW Health in our case. And so they work right along other residents in clinical programs and have all of the expectations that any resident in an ACGME accredited program has. Now, I will say that therein lies a challenge for getting your program funded, in that relatively few programs around the country get GME, graduate medical education funding. Most institutions, and we did a survey about this several years ago, most institutions do not support preventive medicine residents with GME funding, feeling that that funding comes from CMS, it's aligned with inpatient hospital care, and since residents generally don't provide clinical care as clinical residents do, then they are typically not eligible for this funding. So that means that unlike a pediatrics, internal medicine, family medicine residency program where funding would be provided through these GME dollars, we as program directors have to be more creative to find funding for to support our resident salaries, the MPH, and other expenses.
So you kind of alluded to there that funding is a major challenge. And I imagine before you're making the case to the leadership of the institution you want to host this residency at, that you probably need some idea of how the program is going to be funded. But what other kind of key considerations and ducks in a row, so to speak, need to be lined up before you feel ready to present the prospectus for starting a new residency program?
Well, I think you have to acknowledge that long-term, reliable, sustainable funding is an ongoing challenge, I think, for nearly every residency program in the country. So as a program director, that has to be in your skill set, the ability to seek and obtain funding for your residents. And so that is an ongoing challenge. Obviously, looking to the institution is important. And I think strategically, as we recognize the importance of preventive medicine, of upstream medicine, of population health, we can make the case that although these residents aren't returning clinical revenue and don't fit into the traditional financing model for GME, they do provide benefit to the community, to the public's health. And so you have to make that argument that institutionally, the funding for the program should come from the institution. That being said, most programs do not get significant institutional funding. We did have an endowment. It was a unique experience in Wisconsin. Blue Cross Blue Shield converted from a nonprofit to a for-profit. They gave the proceeds of the company to the medical schools in the state. And with that, we were able to use that endowment to fully fund our program. Then the charge has been over the last 10 years to seek institutional and extramural funding so that the institution, this endowment, is not required to be supporting it forever. And that's been a lot of our work over the last decade.
Mm-hmm. And so beyond funding, do you need to have plans aligned for resident recruitment? Do you need to have a curriculum already established? Do you need to have had initial discussions with ACGME about accreditation? Or does all that kind of come after you've had this kind of discussion and commitment to start the program with institutional leadership?
Well, that's a great question. And one thing that I did early was to reach out to colleagues who ran residency programs and who had experience, not just in running a clinical residency program, but also experience in public health. So the director of the pediatric residency program was board certified in medicine and pediatrics, had his MPH. So he was incredibly helpful in giving us a roadmap to follow to establish the program, the importance of accreditation, the importance of governance, the importance of really focusing on not just setting up a program, but having continuous quality improvement. And our residency program directors were very generous in helping us get started and lending their expertise. Now we're sort of on our own. Those folks have moved on. They're no longer working directly with us, always available for advice. But right now we are really using the roadmap provided by ACGME and by talking with colleagues at the ACPM, other program directors, to really learn strategies that have been successful in other settings. For us, we heard that the VA was a potential funder of residency programs. We went to our VA in our first year, and they have supported a resident salary since that time. We then went to the American Cancer Society and heard about that funding source. We applied and were successful in getting funding for the first round and a second round. Unfortunately, that funding has ended. So we're right now sort of scrambling to find funding for that when that program ends. Third, we have applied to HRSA unsuccessfully on a couple of occasions. We were approved, but there were insufficient funds to fund all the programs that had applied. So we've been unsuccessful. We have an application pending. So fingers crossed, we may hear in April or May that we've been successful on our third attempt. And finally, the endowment supports a fellowship training program. And we have one of our residents that's been able to tap into that funding. So it's a variety of funding. The good news is that by having diverse funding sources, you are more stable and confident that losing one of them, like the American Cancer Society funding, won't threaten your program. The bad news is you have to really scramble and keep all these funders informed. You have to, sometimes residents have to do work in a certain setting, a quid pro quo. We're having to, now our residents are having to rotate, do their clinical work in the VA because of a change in rules that the VA requires actual rotations in that clinical setting. So you end up spending a lot of your time looking at ways to have long-term sustainable and predictable funding.
So you talked about the prevention resource centers earlier and the general commitment to public health as reasons why an institution would be interested in supporting a residency program. Are there other particular values that preventive medicine residents bring or that a residency program might bring to an institution, be that a hospital, an academic medical center, a public health department, that they would find enticing to start a residency program?
I would say yes and no. Obviously, our residents during the COVID response were incredibly valuable. We didn't have ongoing clinical commitments, so we could reassign our residents to work at our Department of Health Services, or Public Health Department, and they were incredibly valuable in that response. We literally assigned them as needed to join colleagues at the State Health Department. So that value has certainly been recognized by our institution and by public health in general. I think the challenge is that we really run counter to the business model of clinical medicine, which derives revenue from patient care. That's how clinical departments operate. And they just look at the balance sheet. For every position, you generate revenue by seeing patients and doing procedures, and that's how your department runs. And so typically, a preventive medicine residency program does not generate that clinical revenue. And so they won't see value in your program as a potential revenue source. So you have to argue from the perspective of public health improvement about reaching out to communities, about really improving outcomes by moving upstream, by working in communities, and not by providing care downstream and generating the revenue from that care. So it is a bit of a challenge because it just, you know, when this gets up to the chief financial officer, they don't see the financial argument. It has to really come from a leader, a chief executive officer, somebody who sees benefit beyond the potential financial benefits.
Awesome. So looking bigger, is there any other advice that you would share to a residency director or a prospective residency director who, you know, maybe they're inheriting a residency program and they're looking to start a new one, that you found helpful in your own experience, or that maybe something that you really wish you had learned a decade ago when you were first starting this program?
Well, that's a great question. What do I wish I'd known a decade ago? I do think that we collectively as program directors need to advocate for a change in the system. We're fighting a system that CMS and GME that does not recognize the value of public health, of upstream investments in population health. And so that model, as long as that model exists, then we are going to have a great challenge getting support from our academic medical centers, from our health systems. So I think we have to challenge that model, that is the model of the previous century, and it's not a sustainable model, that health systems are financed by providing more care to more people. So I think some of that work can be done through ACPM and through advocacy. The HRSA funding line, we all know, is not sufficient, and we've been advocating to increase funding. If you're not going to get it from GME funding, then one could argue it should come from another federal source, and HRSA has been very helpful for that. But I know many program directors have applied and have come up short with insufficient funds, put together outstanding proposals, but there's just not enough money to go around. So that would be, those are really systems approaches, policy approaches, advocacy to allow this program, preventive medicine residency programs, to be on equal footing with our clinical residency programs. And then generally, you just have to balance the ability to find funding from partners in your state or extramural funders with the need to have diverse training opportunities. And in a way, it's a challenge not to become a program that is basically fee for service, that if program funds my resident, then I will provide you with services. And some program directors I've spoken with have really sold the resident time to potential funders, but that really limits the ability for your program to offer diverse training opportunities matched to the resident's interests and skills. And so you have to avoid going out and committing so much of your resident time to potential funders if that time is not consistent with what your program needs to do as far as a training program. So I think that's the challenge, that if you end up getting VA funding entirely for your program, that's a good thing. The challenge is then you are basically offering residency training in VA medicine in that population, in that system, and aren't offering community training opportunities with moms and babies, with other systems, because of the limited nature of your funding.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Remington. And I'd just like to end with a bit of a bonus question. But, you know, in your experience, what have you found the value of participating with the American College of Preventive Medicine has been to you as a residency director? And also, how has that participation helped support your residents in their training and in career development?
Well, I think in both ways. As a residency program director, it's the place that I can find advice. We have an active a Google group, a Gmail group that we can ask questions and get advice. So it is our professional society and a place where we talk frequently. It's also a place to get involved in advocacy. I chair the advocacy committee for ACPM, and that's been a valuable place to put some of these, put some of these funding issues on the front burner. But I also know that this is a career development opportunity, that ACPM for residents and young physicians is a place to learn these skills in a relatively safe environment. You have colleagues and mentors who can help you do this. So I encourage residents to be active in the society. Our resident, Maria Mora Pinzon, was active from the day she started our program. She continued to be very active and has been recognized as a now fellow of the American College of Preventive Medicine, but also continues to be very active in the professional society. So I think there are opportunities both early in your career, but also as you practice preventive medicine, either in the community or as a residency program director, to be an active participant in the college.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Remington, thank you so much.